It was a tragedy. Randolph, unsuspecting, stood up among his fellows, blinking in the light, then stared with his hand to his mouth at Omohundro.
"Wait. Hold on a minute. I seen you before, by God."
Omohundro's voice rose in a shout of amazement.
"You're George Rant!"
Randolph was on him like a tiger, carrying the big man to the deck. He was up in an instant, smashing a fist into Bradley's face before the overseer, swearing in astonishment, managed to close with him. They reeled against the bales. Then Randolph jerked his knee up, and the overseer staggered away, yelping.
"Get him!" bawls Omohundro. "He's a runaway!"
Hobbled by his irons, Randolph half-hopped, half-ran for the rail, with Bradley clutching at his shirt. Then he broke away, and before his irons finally tripped him, he had covered the half a dozen yards to the box where I was crouching. He saw me as he fell, and shouted, "Help me, Prescott! Fight them off!" Such an appeal, addressed to Flashy, meets a prompt response. I ducked back behind cover, just as Omohundro came crashing over the bales, clutching at Randolph's feet. The quadroon kicked free, scrambled to the rail, and was trying to roll over it, when he must have realized he would fall plumb into the path of the great 30-foot paddle wheel. He shrieked, the overseer's pistol banged, and Randolph's face contorted with agony. He fell, and the huge wheel blades came churning down on him as he hit the water. With the whole deck roaring bloody murder, it was no place for Flashy. I took half a dozen strides and launched myself over the starboard rail. There was no wheel on that side, and when I surfaced in the warm Mississippi, with all the breath knocked out of me, the Sultana was already 100 yards upriver. I had the presence of mind not to swim for the Arkansas shore, a mere 100 yards away, but to strike out for the Mississippi bank, almost 3/4 of a mile off. I blasted Randolph bitterly at the thought that I was a hunted fugitive once more in the middle of a strange land with only a few dollars in my pocket. It was a damn depressing prospect. I must lie up until the hullabaloo had died down and I could work upriver to the Free States, and so to the Atlantic seaboard, and a passage home. So began 3 of the most damn dismal days of my life, in which I skulked through woods and along byroads as a vagrant, stopping only at the loneliest farms to buy a meal out of the few dollars I had left. However, I would soon be destitute, and I came to the reluctant conclusion that, as a last resort, I must try and find work. I made 1 or 2 cautious inquiries, without success, and was in despair by the 4th morning, when by sheer chance I lit on the very thing I was looking for. I'd spent my last few cents on bread and milk at a run-down store when a burly chap on a grey horse came cantering up, roaring for the storekeeper that he had come to settle his debt.
"What's the row, then, Jim?"
says the storekeeper.
"Headed west," cries Jim. "I seen my last load of goddamn cotton, I can tell you that. It's California for me, my boy, and a piss pot full of gold. There's your $4, Jake, and much obliged to you." "Well, that beats all," says the storeman. "California, eh? Wished I could go myself, by thunder. Say, what's Mandeville going to do without a driver in the middle of picking time?" "Do his goddamn driving his goddamn self," says the other cheerfully. "Yee-hoo! It's California all bust!" And he waved his hat and thundered away.
End of Disc 3.